your pitchfork, light your torch, and get ready for inciting a riot. Conventional thinking has been warned, because we're going to gather, and we're going to march, and we're going to blow its f***ing house down.
Hello, rioters, and welcome back to Inciting a Riot, the podcast. I would be your left-wing dirt-worshipping host, Firelight. I'm so pleased because I get to bring to you today a conversation that I had with Siri, who is the host of the podcast Heathen's Journey. We talk about a lot of things, like defining heathenry. There's a lot of terms out there: Norse paganism, Reconstructionism, Asatru, Germanic paganism, etc. So we kind of talk about, like, what is heathenry? What does it mean to be a heathen in a modern space? And how does Siri square their queer identity, you know, as a marginalized person being in a space that is so historically problematic? Specifically, heathenry keeps coming into pagan media in recent years because of its fraught history, its intertwined history with white supremacy. So we discuss why white supremacy feels so comfortable within heathenry. Siri actually brings up an interesting topic regarding interrogating our own whiteness, what it means to be white, and how that kind of discussion is happening inside of heathen spaces. In addition to Siri's work discussing heathenry, they also work in prisons. And so we got to talk about working in the Minnesota prison program as sort of an ambassador of paganism. It's a really great conversation. I think you're going to enjoy it. Briefly, though, I do want to talk about something that I am starting to see once again in pagan social media, something that I have certainly been guilty of. So I feel fairly qualified to talk about it since it's something that I've done quite a lot over the last 12 years and am now older and wiser and know better. So I mean, I've called this podcast Inciting a Riot because I've always liked the idea of sort of upsetting convention, turning over conventional thinking, really trying to sort of poke at some of the things that we consider too sacred to poke at. And there's a place for that. The thing that I want to talk about real quick, though, is requiring outrage of others, specifically in this case of other people in our community. There are quite a lot of really big things happening around the world right now, a lot of them, and it's almost impossible for most people to keep up with all of the very serious, very real, very big, very painful, very problematic, very harmful things that are happening all around the world. There is slavery and human trafficking, and there's countries on fire, and there's other countries on fire, and the United States is on fire and is experiencing drought, and, you know, there's COVID on top of all of it, and there's now a Delta Plus variant and a Lambda variant, and almost, you know, going on a million people have died here in the United States. I mean, it's just, I mean, and racism and transphobia and homophobia and local crime and national crime and worrying about what the president's going to do and worrying about what the old president's did or done or going to do. Or it's a lot. It's a lot. And there's so much. And it feels like every day there is not just one new thing, but 23 new things that we have to just, one, know about, and two, get very, very outraged about. And occasionally a topic will come about that inspires passion in folks that have a large following. In our community, there aren't a lot of people with very large followings, but sometimes a topic comes out that makes everyone that has a very large following suddenly want to say something about it. And recently, I've noticed a trend where we say, if you're not talking about this, you can't call yourself a pagan. If you're not talking about why, then, you know, if you say that you're a pagan, if you say that you're a witch, then you have to be outraged about this. I need your entire presence online. And the problem with that is that for many people, It is difficult, one, to keep up with everything, and two, not everything is important to everyone at all times. And three, sometimes some of the things that you already know about and have known about for quite a while and are already well-versed on and knowledgeable about and outraged about, other people are just hearing about for the first time on your video where you're shaming them for not being angry enough or something. All I'm going to say is this. Please take it from me, somebody who has screwed this up a lot in 12 years, sort of demanding that you, the listener, be angry about something that I have been spending days or weeks or months researching and you are only just now finding out about and trying to learn more about and figure out where you stand on the issue and how you're going to respond and whether you can help and what your bandwidth is at this moment in time to care about the thing and, you know, how much money and time and resources you can spend on this new thing that you're not already spending on all of the other many things that are important to you. The only thing that I'm going to say is this. Demanding that people be outraged and explaining why something is important are two very, very different things. And I have always found it better for both you and the person finding out about the thing, your listener or whatever, and for the thing itself, if you explain why it is important. It doesn't have to be, I'm explaining why this is important to you. I'm explaining why this is important generally. You know, if I want, you know, making it personal for a second, discussing marriage equality. Marriage equality is important. Marriage equality was an important thing to me for a number of reasons. Personal reasons, legal reasons, tax reasons, economic reasons. There are all sorts of reasons to advocate for marriage equality. And the thing is, explaining those helps people to humanize you, humanize the issue, realize that there's something more at stake than just, this is an issue, this is a headline, and, marriage equality, the gays want to get married. There's more at stake here. Now, does it suck? Does it suck that sometimes important things have to be explained? Yes, of course it does. Because anything that is outside of the norm, outside of the default, and outside of mundane life is challenging. And it's challenging for a lot of reasons, whether it's an ecological cause, like the Line 3 pipeline that quite a lot of people are upset about right now, and rightfully so, or whether it's trans kids in bathrooms, or whether it's India is on fire, or whether it's Australia is on fire, or whether it's California is on fire. Whatever it is, trying to explain to someone that doesn't live there, that doesn't live in California, doesn't live in Australia, doesn't live in India, trying to explain to a white person why racism is bad, trying to explain to a straight person why homophobia is bad. It sucks that it has to be done. It really, really does. It sucks. But if they don't know, there is a great likelihood that they do not actually, because it has never been part of their world, it has never been part of their life, they are just realizing it for the first time. You get what I'm saying here. If this is something new for this person, if this is a new concept, being told that they're doing it wrong, something they didn't even know they were supposed to be doing, isn't going to help. So, may I recommend explaining the importance of issues and not just demanding outrage? We're all very deeply dealing with our own issues right now, whether it's economic insecurity or, you know, a number of other societal or cultural or virulent-based ills right now. And maybe we could all just give one another a break real quick, just real quick. And if a new terrible thing happens, give all of us time to be on board and stop demanding that we be angry about it. Anyways, the one thing I'm going to demand about you right now is that you listen to this interview with Siri of the Heathen's Journey podcast. Siri Plouffe, welcome to Inciting a Riot.
Thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited to have you here. I'm so excited to have this discussion because you run the Heathen's Journey podcast.
And I do indeed.
You are a heathen.
I am. I'm a dirty heathen.
You're a dirty heathen. And you're somebody who
really kind of came to prominence in that community during a time when we were having a lot of really uncomfortable conversations, especially about the heathen community and in the heathen community and around the heathen community regarding race and gender and sexuality and things like that. So for folks that don't know you and don't know your podcast yet, why don't you tell people a little bit about yourself?
Yes. So I am the head witch behind Northern Lights Witch. So I do a lot of teaching and writing. And I started a podcast to kind of piggyback actually off of a series that I was writing at Little Red Tarot. And then Little Red Tarot like stopped having their community blog as a part of it. But that was basically the Heathen's Journey articles. And it was all about my journey as a queer person entering heathenry and kind of blowing that up a little bit, because I avoided heathenry for so long because of how the popular perception of heathenry is that it's very like masculine and like brosatru is a thing and like all of this stuff. And I was very like, that is not me. But it became really clear that I needed to walk this path. And so instead of just writing about it, now I have a podcast about it. I try to like vary my episodes. I try to have like every other episode be an interview and then me like talking through a heathen concept as I view it. So yeah. And it's also like, I will say, I've built a lot of expertise over researching heathenry and practicing and stuff like that. But the podcast is very much like, this is a journey. I am learning, you know, I am sharing my journey with you.
And I appreciate that. You know, I remember a show that so many of us remember fondly was, oh gosh, it was like a Baby Witches podcast. And it wasn't called that. It was like, anyways, it was this couple and they were sort of coming into paganism and, you know, sort of learning. And they decided to start a podcast sort of like from day one of their spiritual journey. And I'm like, we don't have enough of that. We have a lot of experts. We have a lot of people that get behind microphones and are experts, and not enough people that show that none of us are, I mean, you know, we're experts, but like, we're all still very much students and we're learning and we get things wrong.
Exactly. And actually, probably spoiler alert, one of my next episodes of the Heathen's Journey podcast is going to be about that topic, because I think that people are starting to look to me as an expert. And, you know, like I have definitely certain areas of expertise and have done a lot of work, but also like I want to be very clear that I am learning. I have teachers and mentors that I learn from specifically. And yeah, so I just want to be clear about that.
So let's define some terms, because, you know, I love me some sociology. I love me some groups, some in groups, out groups. Let's define some terms, because I think that, I mean, I know personally I've gotten these terms wrong over the years, conflating different terms that don't necessarily mean the same thing. So you call your podcast The Heathen's Journey. So for you, what is your understanding of like the words heathen versus other terms that have been associated with those kinds of spiritual traditions? Things like Norse paganism, Norse Reconstructionism, Asatru, Germanic paganism, Germanic Reconstructionism, that kind of thing. So maybe let's give a little redux of what those words mean, who those communities are ascribed to. Are they all the same community? Are they not?
Yes. So, this is so complicated. So, I actually am kind of like wanting to rebrand my podcast a little bit, because I don't know that heathen suits me as much anymore personally.
Oh my gosh. No, you said a word and now it must be you forever.
Right. Exactly. So heathen, basically, I read somewhere once recently and I wish that I could quote it like directly, but pagan is in reference to like the land. Like it's an old word for a specific kind of land that people were on when they were practicing like pre-Christian beliefs. And heathen, like the heath, like, so the northern folks came from the heathen lands. So that's where that term comes from. And so heathen is very much a, you know, movement of people trying to connect to pre-Christian Nordic paganism. I kind of use Nordic pagan and heathen interchangeably. I just like heathen a little bit better. It's a little spicier. I don't know.
A little spicy. A little spicy yeah. Potato.
Yeah. So Asatru is the other one that you'll hear a lot. And Asatru literally means followers of the Aesir. So the realm of gods. There are two different, at least two different clans of gods in Nordic mythology. And so Æsir are, you know, the ones that are Odin and Thor and the more well-known ones. And then the Vanir are the others. So if you only work with the Vanir, then you would probably not call yourself Asatru. You would probably call yourself Vanatru.
New word for firelight today. Love it.
Yes. And then Odinism is... people feel free to leave all of my like verbal tics in because they add the color. Odinism is people who follow Odin specifically, but Odinist is a little bit more like only followers of Odin, and usually that community is more white supremacist. So if you hear somebody say, I'm an Odinist rather than I'm a heathen, like that is a little like in-group clue. And then, oh God, what else is there? Nordic witch. I actually feel like Nordic witch fits me better than heathen these days. Nordic just being like from the Nordic countries. And that can be a whole host of things, right? You know, like you can, it's not necessarily within just like following these old gods. And then another word for you today is troll cunning.
I think I've heard that only because I've been re-listening to your podcast.
Yes. So troll cunning is someone who
a very good horror movie name.
Yes. But they are a practitioner of trolldom, which is the living folk magic tradition in Sweden and Norway, mostly Sweden.
So Asatru exists beyond just the Asatru Folk Assembly?
Yes, it does.
Okay, good, good, good. I thought so, but I was like, oh gosh, you know, I'm making the same mistake that I know, you know, a lot of people do. When that's all you see is Asatru Folk Assembly, you almost sort of assume that it's all like the same. And that's, you know,
yes.
I'm like, I know that's not true, but gosh, it feels like that's the only Asatru.
Well, and I know that there are a lot of heathens in particular who will only refer to themselves as heathens so that that mistake is not made about them personally. So like I have said like on my podcast and in my blog posts and stuff that I will never refer to myself as Asatru or Odinist, even though I am a follower of Odin. Like I will never refer to myself as Odinist.
You kicked off your podcast pretty early on, like episodes 1 and 2, talking about the white supremacy that exists and seems to pervade heathenry, Norse. Oh, we didn't talk about Germanic. Is Germanic and Norse, is all of that the same? Is that the same? Can I conflate those terms?
So Germanic is...
Because I'm gonna fuck it up if you don't tell me correctly.
It's okay. So Germanic is obviously like more from like outside of the Scandinavian peninsula. And that is actually, Germanic refers to the linguistic root of... So like Norwegian, Swedish are all Germanic languages. And the Germanic tribes are kind of all throughout that area. So when Tacitus was writing in, I think like 98 AD, or CE, sorry. So when Tacitus was writing in like 95 CE, he was writing about the Germanic tribes that were closer to Rome, but they had beliefs that kind of went all the way up into Finland, Sweden, Norway, Denmark, those areas. And then even further north than that, you have like the Sami people, who are the, you know, like indigenous Northern European folks.
So for the purposes of this conversation, we'll use heathen.
Yes.
Is that good? Okay.
That's great.
So you do talk pretty early on in the Heathen's Journey podcast about the white supremacy that does seem to exist so comfortably inside of that particular sect of our magical community. And, you know, maybe the Asatru Folk Assembly is a good jumping off point and why so many people shy away from wanting to call themselves Asatru, even though it might technically fit their spiritual belief and path best because of the association with the Asatru Folk Assembly. So for folks that don't know, or for folks that don't want to hear it from me, what is the, you know, what's the issue regarding white supremacy inside of the heathen community, and specifically in regards to that hot button word of Asatru and as it relates to the Asatru Folk Assembly?
So how far back do we want to go? Because I can...
Girl, listen, it's...
All right. So it honestly, like, a lot of it goes back to literal Nazism and before. Mm-hmm. So the Nazis, in their attempt to create an idea of the, you know, Aryan race or the master race, the Übermensch in Deutsch, they co-opted a lot of the Teutonic and Germanic mythology, which then, of course, is the very similar to the Nordic mythology. And they did things like they used runes, like, explicitly in their imagery. They also actually, and very few people talk about this, but they also pulled from Roman, like, architecture and mm-hmm. Roman ideas and rituals. So, you know, it wasn't just the... Germanic, but it was primarily the Germanic. So they were pulling from this in order to basically state, like, this is our home culture. Like, this is the culture of the Übermensch. And also to distance themselves from other states. Basically, it goes back to concepts of race and concepts of different European nations being at the top of the, you know, hierarchy of race, and the Nazis attempting to do that, and to say that they are. So then what really happens is that after World War II, Nazis lose, and there are a lot of people who are white supremacists who are organizing, who are now imprisoned. And Germany has a very strict law against Nazis gathering at this time. So, but they did have very free...
I feel like we should have some of those laws, just, like, throwing that out there. I feel like we...
Yeah, for sure.
I feel like we should have some of those laws. It'd be cool.
So
Nazis gathering Germany, in groups, and how Germany says, no, bad.
Yes. So, but Germany was very, like, freedom of religion is important. And so people began to gather as Nazis saying, we are just followers of Asatru. Like, we're just followers of Odin. You can't tell us that we can't gather. Mm-hmm. So you have these people who are organizing, you know, in prisons and outside of prison, like, around this ideal. And of course there are some, you know, aspects of Odinism or some aspects of, non-white supremacist Asatru that are included in their meetings. And because this was a fertile ground for, recruitment, basically, that model came to America. Specifically, Else Christensen was an organizer who would go into prison saying, like, hey, I'm, you know, heathen, and this is freedom of religion. But then it was basically, like, a white supremacist, like, recruiting ground, and how people could move that way. So you have a lot of, to this day, you have a lot of groups who use runes as, you know, the center of their, like, logo, who are, you know, and it's very painful for me to see that, actually, because, you know, I have such a deep relationship with the runes. And so, like, to see, like, the rune for home and family being used as a white supremacist rallying point to say, like, oh, it's my blood, right? It is my blood and family. And, you know, our blood is stronger than and better than other blood. Like, that is so important to me as a practitioner. And it even goes further back into the 1800s, if we want to talk about political romanticism in Europe and nationalism. You know, Wagner's Ring Cycle, exciting a lot of nationalist feelings in people, and people trying to find their European identity as these different European nations were being carved out, because what we now know of Germany as Germany had been in a lot of wars, and so they were finally, like, getting, you know, statehood in certain ways. And they were using this romantic ideal of our pagan history to rally around that culture. And then that leads into kind of the idea of our mythology is better than your mythology. Our culture is better than your culture. And that is how it bled into and led to Nazism. And I mean, literally, like, the Hitler Youth would also talk about, you know, oh, we need to rise up as young like German people, and they would, you know, call on Wotan, who is the Germanic like Odin, as a part of this. Carl Jung wrote a really infamous essay on called Wotan that was basically like talking about how this mythology was used to strengthen the blood and soil movement, which is basically like this is our blood and this is our soil and we are better than everyone. So that is still continuing today, of course. The Satru Folk Assembly is still in existence and operation. They actually just set up a church in Minnesota, and a lot of Minnesota heathens were up in arms about that because it's a quote unquote church. It's not a real church. It's a recruitment ground. And that's why like a lot of the Minnesota like heathen inreach, like prison inreach programs are so very important. Because it combats that attitude of like, this is the ground in which we will recruit. So yeah, that's kind of, I feel like I was kind of all over the place, but I hope that it was.
No, I appreciate that. It makes me wonder, how long have you been on your personal journey? Like, how long have you been on your heathen's journey?
So I was so resistant to heathenry because being just like in the witchy community for so long, you know, I knew about this. I knew about these associations. And so I was just like, fuck that. I might have Nordic ancestry. Like my grandmother made the lefse and we had like, you know, like it was very much in my culture, right, growing up. But I was very much like, no, I don't want this to be a part of my spiritual path. I was actually initiated Wiccan as a teenager. And I say that because I was actually initiated by a high priest and priestess. So, like, it
was not one of those self-dedication rituals you get out of the back of the Cunningham and you.
Right. And those are beautiful. But I just think that, like, knowing a lot of Wiccans, like, it's different. It just, like, is different.
It is. Very much so.
Yeah. So I was initiated Wiccan, rapidly fell out of favor with that coven, moved away, was solitary for a long time. And then when I was in ritual in 2014, I believe, I asked for a goddess to come to me. And I did not get a goddess. I got Odin. And I was like, nah, I don't want to work with you. You're not a goddess. But Odin was very persistent. And so that was really what kicked off my journey. And since then, I've been kind of trying to like take away, you know, like kind of strip some of the Wicca like from my personal practice because it's not really true to me anymore. It's just like, I can throw up a Wiccan circle in like 5 seconds, you know, like it's so easy for me after 15 years to do that. 16. Oh my God. 16 years, 17 years. So yeah, I've been, babe.
We're old. Sorry to tell you.
Oops.
I was watching The Hot Ones with Olivia Rodrigo, you know, with the buffalo wings and it's on YouTube. And Olivia Rodrigo, biggest pop star in the world right now, was like, oh my God. I love vintage things. I love a vintage aesthetic. Oh my God. Like 1999, I wish. Like, oh my God, I would love to go back in time to 1999. Oh my God, the 90s are, I'm just like, welp, I'm dust. I am now dust. I'm just going to go dig a hole and I'm going to crawl into that hole. I'm going to go live in the hole now. I live in that hole.
I am a desiccated corpse that is walking around.
I just vintage. It's vintage. The 90s is vintage now. And
it literally is. If you
don't,
like...
No, Siri Plus. No. Bad they them. No. No.
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah. So, oof, oof. Yes. I was not initiated in the 90s, but pretty close to. So I've been trying to like take away the Wiccan elements of my practice just because I'm trying to immerse myself as much as I can in Nordic magic and culture. And
taking Wiccanish elements sort of out of any of our practices, especially those of us of a certain age, is difficult because for a very, 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 very long time, books that were just sort of like intro to paganism, pagan 101, but like, even if it was like, okay, this is just, if you just want to be a pagan, like if you don't want to be Wiccan, if you don't want to be a pagan, here's how to be a pagan. okay, so your goddess is on the left side and your god is on the right side, and here's how to cast a circle, and these are the, but this is not Wicca. This is just being a pagan. We're just being a pagan. But you are going to celebrate the 8th Sabbath of the Wheel of the Year, and it is going to be, and Gerald Gardner is daddy, and but it's not Wicca.
I know, and that kills me so much, because it's like, if you're Wiccan, it's okay, baby.
It's okay. Are you Wiccan? Because it's okay. This is a safe space. You can be Wiccan here, and you can see, and I'm pagan. No, baby, you Wiccan. It's okay.
Yeah.
I don't know why we have, I really don't understand the Wicca hate. I don't even a little bit understand it.
I think that people are trying to be like, oh, this other thing is so much more authentic. But like, I don't believe for a second that Gerald Gardner like was initiated by this like coven in the woods who, you know, had this unbroken tradition. But I do believe that, you know, and know these are facts, that Gerald Gardner, you know, was a member of the OTO for a little while.
Sure.
Like, did practice ceremonial magic. Was involved with the, you know, British Museum of Witchcraft, you know, like he knew his shit, and he just created a foundation for people to build off of. And, you know, that's not inauthentic.
No, it's not. Like,
it's fine. Mean,
you
it's
know,
fine,
religion is a lot like whose line is it anyway? Everything's made up and the points don't matter. Like,
exactly.
Stop being so very, very, very precious with it. It's okay.
Right. Like I'll just so much appreciate when I'm reading a book and they're like, yeah, this is a Wiccan circle, because I'm like, oh yeah, because this is different from like casting, laying a compass round in traditional witchcraft. And this mm-hmm. is different from, you know, like doing all of these other things. It's different from like a Solomonic, you know, three levels of whatever circle, you know, like it's different and it's specific. And I'm like,
that's
yes,
my favorite
please.
Circle actually is the three levels of whatever circle. That's the circle that I cast on the weekends.
Yes.
I go into my living room and I cast my three circles of whatever.
It takes like 5 hours every time. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. And all I do is just quote. I just yell clueless quotes into the ether. And I'm just like, it's like, so whatever. It's like, so what? that's my circle. So, okay. So you've been you've been in the witchy community for a good long time, and
yes.
you have been a heathen or on your heathen's journey for a pretty good long time at this point, you know, 6-7 years. Sorry. Unfortunately, you're old. We all are.
I don't mind.
But so you have been part of, you know, sort of seeing a major arc of what it has meant for heathenry to come to the foreground in pagan conversation. And us talking about some of the recent events of the Asa True Folk Assembly and stuff like that that's happened in the last like 2 years, we can do that. But the thing is, like, I know on this show, I know on my blog, I've covered, you know, other instances of overt white supremacy coming out of this specific community. So I want to know, just from your perspective, the perspective of somebody that's been in that community and on that journey for so long, why do you think white supremacy feels so comfortable in that space?
So many reasons. So I think that, you know, obviously there's that history that I outlined of like, you know, mm-hmm. like returning to our pagan roots and like those pagan roots being better than other people's pagan roots and, you know, like creating Germany as a nation and creating, you know, these places as specific nations and getting that nationalist like idea in your brain. And honestly, like, I think it's who is the prolific author in the heathen community. So Stephen Flowers / mm-hmm. Edred Thorsen is a white supremacist, and he's written like 20 fucking books. So if you are trying to get involved, like, you probably have picked up like Runes by Edred Thorsen, or Alu, which is also written by him. And he was really buddy-buddy with Stephen McNallan, who is the creator of the Asa True Folk Assembly. So like, it's built into a lot of people's education about mm-hmm. the, like, about heathenry and about Nordic paganism. And it doesn't need to be. I mean, actual rune scholars. So there are actual runologists, because funny fact, you know, like, runes are an alphabet. So uh-huh.
So you can go to school and you can learn it.
Yeah.
Like for real.
You can become an archaeologist and study runes. Like you can be a runologist. You know, like runologists look at Torsen's work and they're just like, the fuck? You know, so like,
as should we all.
Right. Yes. But I mean, even from like a, this is what words mean perspective, he's wrong. So I think that, you know, that's where a lot of that comfort comes from. And I know that a lot of people also, this is a really uncomfortable thing about white people, but I'm going to say it because I'm white. So I can.
Spicy mayonnaise take.
Right. So white people want to have, like, white people want to have something to be upset about. Like, oh, they're stealing this from me. You know, they're stealing this from my culture. No, your culture is whiteness. Like, if you're American, baby.
We like nothing more than to be victims. And I don't understand it even a little bit. We want to be the victim so fucking bad. So bad we want to be the victim.
And I think so much of it is this like weird, twisted understanding that we have done terrible things as like a people when we, you know, accepted whiteness. And it's literally within the construction of race, like people blending into whiteness rather than and like leaving behind your actual culture in order to blend into and assimilate with whiteness. I mean, you see it, my spouse is Irish and Italian, and both of those communities, when they came to America, very much have like done that as well. And so white people, it's like this weird twisted thing where like we feel the guilt of what our ancestors have done on a certain level, but we don't want to be like them. So we need to be a victim in some way. So this is also fascinating. So there was a really great article, which I can share with you after this, that was written by a medieval historian. There's also, like, interestingly enough, within academia, like, there's this whole level of medieval and runic historians who are, you know, basically fighting back against this idea that Europe was a white monolith in the Middle Ages. And they are very loud and very much, one great blog is History from the Bottom. So, like, you know, bottom looking up at people, bottom of the class scale, fantastic blog. And, you know, there are just a ton of people who are trying to bring in like voices of color and understanding Europe as a place that has always been diverse. It's just this racist myth that Europe was not diverse. I digress. But so I think that that is also a huge part of why like white supremacy is comfortable within it is because of that victim mentality. You see this with the Wolves of Vinland. So they're another white supremacist group. And they always refer back to Vinland, which is, we know, a failed Viking settlement in Canada. They were literally run out by the indigenous community. Like, when I say failed, I mean that, like, the indigenous community prevailed and, like, ran them the fuck out of town.
Good for them.
Right? Yes. Like, but, like, why would you name your white supremacist, like, gang after the Wolves of Vinland? It's because you want to both see yourself as a victor and attempt to claim indigeneity to the U.S.
It's that Confederate flag fetishization. It's like,
yes,
you guys lost. Why are you naming? Well, it's all wrapped up in like, well, we were the oppressed people. We're the oppressed group. We were the oppressed Southern whites and et cetera. I mean, you know, it's that, yeah. You know, yeah.
Yeah. So there's this like mythic idea that Vinland is, you know, and was alive and well even after. But we have two sagas that depict the fall of Vinland. You know, we have two sagas that are existent that talk about how the indigenous people just like really ran the Vikings out of their ground. So it's a very strange, like, kind of pairing victory with victimization. So they can claim to be both the victors because they, you know, oh, we just don't know. There were Vikings all over. It was, you know, like, we didn't lose, but also they can claim the victimhood because they were run out of town. So it's this, like, we win two ways kind of thing. So that is really interesting. And I think that a lot of white people in America, like, to try to claim that as like, oh, but, you know, like, I'm not a colonizer because like my ancestors are from here. What do you think the Vikings were? Like, brutal colonizers, yeah.
Like, also, how did they come here? They didn't come here. I mean, like, I don't know how you
think
you got here.
They didn't spring from the ground.
But, yeah.
The Vikings didn't just like spring from the ground in Canada. Like, that's not what happened. So yeah, it's this whole twisted thing. And I think too that it's this like specialness. So to boil it down, it is the authors within heathenry who have, you know, been taken in by white supremacy that then, you know, even if their books aren't overtly white supremacists, they have that like, you know, that teaching, that's the point
they've
of view
been in
of the
pot
author.
they've been in the cast, they've gotten the seasoning on it.
Yep.
Even if it-
yep. And so then other people pick that up, and then also that like victim sort of mentality, victim victor mentality. And also I think that there is just an underlying like, what is my ancestry?
I was gonna say, I mean, I feel like there's a big component of it, especially in, you know, recent years with the rise of the popularity of genetic testing and of people wanting to reconnect to their ancestry and their ancestry, doing the DNA kits and the 23andMe's and the ancestry DNAs and stuff. And, you know, there's a lot of validity to spiritual recommendations of saying, okay, well, you know, if you don't know where to start, start with what is around you and start with your family and start with your own ancestry and start there. But then there is a really uncomfortable space where starting there for a lot of white people, I don't know, you bring up a really good point about like nationalism and, you know, ancestry and the German state, you know, the rise of Germany as its own country and things like that, is that there seems to be this really uncomfortable Venn diagram where when you put like nationalism and spirituality and like white genealogy all together, for some reason, you just seem to keep getting Nazi in the middle. And I don't, why is like, oh, you know, pride and family and history. Oh, Nazi. Oh, we got another Nazi. Like, I don't, like,
I hate it. I honestly really hate it. And a lot of heathens that I am in community with really hate it as well. And, you know, we actively fight against that. And, you know, it's this growing movement. I personally do not trust like a heathen author unless they have very explicitly said that they are not a white supremacist. Like,
yeah,
personally,
like it's getting to the point where it's like, I don't know, if you say you're a heathen, I'm looking on your page. I'm looking to find, Black Lives Matter? Do you say, I mean, I need to see the keywords that you're not a white supremacist, because I hate to say it. And maybe that's the place to be uncomfortable here, but I'm like, if you say you're a heathen or you say you're part of that, I kind of assume default, at least you probably smell a little white supremacy on the surface until you say otherwise. Like at this point, right. And like you said, there's a lot of people that are like, I don't want to call myself an Osatru, even though that fits my path because of the association. Like there's too much. It's just too comfortable here.
And, you know, it's also, I just want to point out that like saying I'm not a white supremacist is not hard.
No, because if you're not one, just say you're not one.
Right.
I am not a one-eyed, one-horned, flying purple people eater. And I can say that with pride. Thank you.
Right. You know, like it's not the thing that really kills me, particularly about Black Lives Matter, is that like it's a very simple statement, like Black Lives Matter.
Right.
Period.
Right.
But, like, you know, like that shouldn't be controversial in my brain. Right. You know, like the idea that these lives matter should not be a controversial statement. And yet it is, which is, you know, like the white supremacy and racism within America and around the world. So a whole lot of my work is about kind of excising a lot of white supremacy from this and creating a safe space, honestly, for queer people and heathens of color, because there are a lot of heathens of color to learn.
Well, and I like that because there's a concept in your podcast that comes up from time to time. And I love the way that you word it, where you call it interrogating your own whiteness. You say we need to interrogate our own whiteness. What does that mean to you?
So interrogating whiteness, as far as I understand it and have learned through, you know, race theory and stuff like that, basically, like, white people have given up culture in order to become white, you know, the white being the supremacy, not, you know, like Nordic or Irish or, you know, Italian, and different European nations became white at different times. So actually in, you know, the 1800s, when anthropology was beginning to become a science, they were categorizing people in the world based on, you know, their elite status or whatever. And actually, like, Irish and Italians were near the bottom, like, of that. And then eventually became white because then the skin color made, you know, like, was the driving force. So interrogating your own whiteness is to look at how we have been raised within white supremacy, because we have been raised in white supremacy. So you have to look into your own mind and really look at, like, okay, like, what is an assumption that I am making because I was raised in white supremacist culture? What is a, you know, how am I moving in the world that is different from how other people can move in the world because I am white? And then also, a huge part of my work is replacing whiteness with actual culture. So, like, I don't want my culture to be whiteness. I want my culture to be Nordic. And, you know, what does that mean? That means talking to my tomta. That means, you know, leaving him porridge on Yule. You know, that means
watching a lot of Hilda.
Honestly, Hilda's great. Like, the way that that show depicts a lot of the magical beings in Nordic folklore is actually very accurate and fantastic.
I do need a flying cat cloud, please. Whatever that thing is. I want that, please.
I desperately need a fox deer. Oh my god. So cute.
I almost bought a plushie, but they were very expensive, so I did not. But if anybody wants to gift me one, I do accept gifts.
Yes, make that two. Yes, because there's so, you know, like, there is so much culture here. Like, for us, it's, you know, doing a sauna ritual is amazing. And actually, that's really interesting, too, because a lot of white people in Minnesota were crowding sweat lodges because, you know, Native folks had opened them up and were, like, allowing white people to join them, but then too many white people were in the sweat lodges and Native people weren't able to get a spot in them. And so a lot of heathens in the community have been like, wait a minute, white people really want to be involved in sweat lodges because we have sauna rituals in our own culture. And so there's, like, this yearning there for that culture. So why don't we just, like, host heathen sauna rituals instead and, like, let the indigenous community have the sweat lodges?
You know, I really resonate with that because the gay community also has sauna rituals. I don't think they're the same thing as sauna rituals. Probably not, but it's very sacred to the gay, the gay community.
Yes. But
I appreciate that because the flip side of that white people as a concept gave up a lot of, you know, what you're saying is white people gave up culture in exchange for whiteness and supremacy and power and position in society, capital S society at large, in favor of homogeneity, which leads to this push towards religious exoticism here in the U.S. I mean, it's a problem everywhere, but, you know, speaking in our own backyard, which is where we get into things like, you know, I talk about her in the book, but the sociologist Veronique Altglas talks a lot. She wrote a brilliant book about religious exoticism in what she calls the disenchanted West, which is where sort of the white, I'll use your pronunciation, white people, you know, in our suburban whites, our whiteness here in America leads us to think that we do not have any culture of our own, I guess, besides, like, Ford pickups and terrorizing animals on the 4th of July or something like that. And it leads us to try to find culture elsewhere. And we will literally choose parts of other cultures that are visually appealing, is what Altglas presents to us. And she's like, that's how we get yoga stripped of its Hindu origins. That's how we get Kabbalah stripped of its Jewish origins. That's how we get, you know, and she goes down the sort of just tears apart so much of what has sort of become like suburban whiteness, and also discusses how it's very real that people that partake of so many of those things, of yoga and belly dance, and, you know, the list is on and on, get really uncomfortable when you bring up the culture of origin and the spirituality that that particular practice is part of. You know, if you start saying, well, yoga was to prepare the body for meditation and for other, you know, deeply difficult to do spiritual acts, people get really uncomfortable with that, and kind of goes into, why are we so uncomfortable with this? So it's this push when you strip people of their culture and you just say, okay, you're white now. And why, so what do you get for being white? Well, you get to be killed by police less, and you get to be in charge of everything, and you get to make more money, and you get to be assumed to not be a criminal and all this stuff. But like, your culture is just sort of being white. It's just sort of, it's just sort of being white.
It's so bland.
It's so bland. Your culture is white bread and mayonnaise, and that is what you get. And so then what do people do? Well, they fill it in with color, and they literally take it from people of color. Like, right, they take visual colors, and they take it from people of color, and they're like, well, this is my culture now. I'm going to make this pastiche.
Right, and it's so interesting, too, because I am actually connected to, like, European pagans, mm-hmm. too, who like mm-hmm. have a deeper place connection. Mm-hmm. American white people are so bereft of, you know, feeling connected to this place, because I honestly believe that the land spirits in America are still angry. And so we feel,
you don't belong here. You stole it.
Exactly though. And,
the land has a longer memory than people do.
Exactly. You know, it's interesting. I spent a summer right before I started really being more public about my heathenry. I spent a summer in Oslo, Norway, completely unrelated to any witchcraft stuff. But I felt there a very serious, like, happiness and security. And I felt connected and I felt supported in a way that I don't hear. Mm. And so that's actually my friend Minta Carlson they're a troll cunning. And they work with Johannes Gordbeck, who wrote Trolldom and is kind of the eminent scholar, teacher, practitioner in that field. And so Minta is partnering with Johannes to create these Swedish magic tours, which basically brings people from America to Sweden to experience the land spirits there, to go to the burial mounds, to go to, you know, these incredible culturally important sites. Because until you've done that, I feel like there's like such a disconnect, I think, between American heathens and European heathens. Because we don't have those land connections. You know, like, we don't meet the trolls here. Well, we do. They're just internet trolls. But like... But like, we don't meet the mountain trolls. We don't meet the forest spirits. We don't meet the elves. So I think that's, you know, very important. And just realizing that, oh, there is actually culture that we can keep going with. You know, I say this all the time, but, you know, it's my grandmother making lefse every Christmas, right? It's these things that are, you know, specific to my family, specific to other people's families. And I think a lot of white people see people of color and see, you know, like African-American culture or indigenous culture. And they're just like, I want that. I want that sense of community. I want that sense of belonging. I'll just take it. And it's not appropriate. Don't do that.
I want to know, there is a difficult space that I think a lot of people in our community are trying to navigate, where the question of how long does something have to be associated with white supremacy and white supremacists before we just say, okay, it's not worth trying to uphold it, continue it. How long does a symbol have to be associated with white supremacy before it's a swastika? How long, you know, what is, do the history, because I see so many arguments online happen between groups that I'm not a part of. I'm just watching because I'm here like everybody else, where it's like, okay, well, these runes are used by, you know, the Nazi youth, and these runes continue to be used by, you know, white supremacy and white supremacists, et cetera, et cetera. So when you use these runes online, you look like a white supremacist. And it's like, well, I'm not doing that. And I'm not going to let white supremacists claim this. And I'm going to fight back by using it. And it's like, how long are we going to wave the swastika around and say, okay, well, but historically, this symbol was a symbol for peace and prosperity and love and joy. And I know it means death to Jews now, but it means for me peace and prosperity and joy. And I'm just waving it on this red flag here because red was the color of peace. So I'm just waving this red flag with my symbol outside. So I just, the serious way to ask this question is, you know, what is the value in continuing to hold on to symbols or traditions once they have become so closely tied to white supremacy?
Well, I will say, first of all, that I don't think that the swastika in a Western context can be resurrected in our lifetimes. Probably not.
I agree with that, but I do
after.
Also see a lot of runes, specific runes.
Oh, right, yes,
that are used by white supremacists. I mean, didn't we see an example of that during Republican primaries? Wasn't one of the stages of debate like set up like one of the runes?
Yes, it was the Odal rune.
Yes,
it was the Odal rune, and that rune is actually only white supremacy. Like that's not within. Yeah, that's not within the old like. Alphabets.
One of the Futharks.
Yeah, it's not within a Futhark, but it is built on the rune Othala, which means family, kinship, and legacy. So, like, it makes sense that they would bastardize that rune in particular.
Sure.
So with the runes, I feel like, honestly, because the runes have such a long history before they were misused in this way, and because they are a set, right? You know, like if you have people that are reading runes, like all 24 of them or all, you know, whichever Futhark you are working with, then that feels more like supported and grounded to me. Of course, if you put two Soilo runes next to each other, what do you get? The SS logo, right? So like, you can't do that. You just fucking can't. And that is the price that we pay for like allowing white supremacy into our faith. And now the hard work is in creating associations with the runes that are supportive, that are inclusive, that are, you know, beautiful in their own right. And there are just certain symbols that you just can't do that. Like, and I think too that, how long does something need to be associated with white supremacy in order for it to be not touchable, right? That's your question. I think it depends on context. I think it depends on timing. And I also think it depends on the context of the people who are talking about it, frankly. You know, because if that's actually a huge part of why I even go into like linguistics and phonetics of the runes in my like teaching and work is because like, no, this was an alphabet for centuries before, you know, certain aspects of this alphabet were co-opted. So putting all of that in there. And I think also my teacher, Kari Toring, talks about the Nordic folk root. So what are some cores of the, you know, Nordic spirit? They might be, one really big one is being impeccable with your word, speaking the truth as much as possible. Another one is, you know, like kinship and helping one another and seeing you know, a group of people using the runes in a way that is outside of our Nordic folk root, it's like, oh, well, that's just not the same thing. Mm-hmm. Like, that is just not the same thing. But as a public figure using your, you know, beautiful symbols that you have worked with, you just need to be very careful about how you show those. And honestly, like, it was really funny. So I actually have some context for this. So the swastika in Hindu faith is, you know, still widely used and very beautiful. And I actually studied abroad in India when I was in college. And my first 2 days there, I saw this shrine. We were going for a hike and I saw this like mini shrine that was just covered in swastikas. And it was so jarring. It was so jarring because that, you know, like from where I was standing, that was very, you know, like, oh my God. But they were also orange. Mm-hmm. They were done in the, I forget what the paint is called, but there's a specific orange pigment mm-hmm. that I think is created from magnolias. From marigolds. Seeing it outside of the white supremacist context was really eye-opening. And I'm also here to say that white people should not say, oh, well, it's just a Hindu symbol of peace. Like, it's fine for me to use this. No, it's not, because that's also appropriation. Like,
it's all that religious exoticism again.
Right, there it is, just again.
Just going back. Just because yeah. It's vibrant and orange doesn't mean you get to have it now. Thank you.
Great. I'm sorry. That's not acceptable.
I think that something that you're saying also resonates with just sort of a piece of being a good citizen and being a broader part of the magical community and talking about appropriation and appreciation and the difference between the two, you know, and just sort of navigating how you behave in public by being conscious and conscientious of the comfort levels of others that are sharing space with you. You know, if something that you are going to say, if something that you are going to wear, if there are symbols that you might have, might make other people uncomfortable, if they express that discomfort, be open to that. Don't be defensive of that. And then maybe take reasonably appropriate measures to just be a conscious citizen, a conscious community member. If you're wearing runes that somebody is associating with white supremacy or something like that, if it's clear that you're making other people very physically uncomfortable, I don't think that it's an inappropriate thing to say. Maybe either modify some things or answer some questions or be willing to be the person in discomfort for a while, you know?
Yes. And also, like, we have so many other cultural symbols.
Yes.
Like, you can, yes. You can be terminally Norwegian in so many other ways. Believe me, you know, like wearing Norwegian knitwear, for example, for me has become an act of faith or a signifier of my faith. You know, wearing a troll cross has become, you know, like a signifier of my faith in some way. And that is a very new symbol, but I still really love it. Damn it. And there are so many other ways of expressing that, that you don't need to, you know, wear certain runes. Or, you know, you don't need to always have the runes be present. Because honestly, that's also just not how I work with the runes, right? Mm-hmm. You know, like I throw the runes on the cloth, I cast them. I draw runes specifically. And sometimes I will make a bind rune, which is where it's kind of like a sigil, but you're using the runes and the energy of the runes to make a specific symbol that is new to you. But those are also, once you've accomplished the magic that you needed to accomplish with that bind rune, you destroy it. So much like a sigil in certain ways. So, you know, there are so many other ways of showing your heathen roots that you don't need to only use the runes for that.
And it's not required for you to exist in that, you know, I just feel like we are so used to our comfort level being the dominant need, you know, we need to be comfortable, but especially as white people, we've been the one we've been the group who's gotten to be the most comfortable most of the time. So if there are other people that you're something about the way that you're presenting is making them uncomfortable, the things that you're saying are making them uncomfortable, maybe it's okay for you to be the one sitting in discomfort for 5 minutes. It's okay. Maybe you can put your necklace away, or maybe you can put your, you know, whatever. It's maybe you can be the one to sit in discomfort for just 5 minutes. It's fine.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Like, I have been uncomfortable in so many instances, you know, just trying to like figure out what is the right thing for me to, you know, like how is the right way for me to present, you know, and yes, I'm a much better person for it.
Yes. Yeah. Let's talk about prisons. I know that you're really passionate about working inside of Minnesota's prison program. Is that right?
Yes. I got really involved more so in the work more recently. Mm-hmm. We actually have an elder in the community, Sarah Axtell, who for 19 years now has been going to prisons and leading heathen ceremony in prisons and stuff. And she is, you know, now looking to kind of pass the baton on to other people. We talked about this a little bit in one of my podcast episodes, but I basically, after all of the shit that went down, so I live in Minneapolis, and after all of the shit that went down with, you know, George Floyd, and, you know, that, like, I had known that the police were bad. Like, George Floyd was by far not the first person to be murdered by police in Minneapolis. And it is actually because of the intense amount of people who have been murdered by police in Minneapolis, that George Floyd was a spark, you know, in a powder keg. And so after that, I was really like, okay, I need to get right with, you know, my ideas on abolition, my ideas on like prison and alternative policing and stuff. And I know that a lot of people who live here, basically, like, that was happening. And we were like, okay, like, what do we think that we actually want instead of this? Because clearly this isn't working. We are actually, like, I would say that Minneapolis is less safe because of the police force here. Right. And that's most places. So I really wanted to get involved in abolition work. And actually, the second episode of my podcast, which is where I talked about Odinism and white supremacy in more detail, that came out right the same week as George Floyd was murdered, I believe. And I had a different topic planned for the day, and I was just like, nah, we need to be talking about this. And so I reached out to Sarah Axtell, and it was really hard because actually, like, over the last year, no one has been allowed to go into the prisons because of COVID and because of the intense regulations around contact with prisoners. She couldn't be in contact with anyone, but she was able to send like recorded meditations and, you know, some like recorded like visualizations and stuff like that for folks to kind of tie them over. And now, you know, we might be able to start doing that work again. I'm really passionate about a pen pal service that I think would be fantastic. Just connecting heathens on the inside with, you know, heathens on the outside. And it might become more like pagans and witchcraft in general. I have a friend who went through the prison system as well. And I have learned a lot from him about what that's like. And I just know that there are a lot of witches and a lot of pagans in prison right now who, you know, are vulnerable because of, you know, like who might be let in to run services. So that's the Asatru Folk Assembly. Like, that's literally how they recruit in a lot of instances. But Sarah, who is very much on my wavelength, goes in and, you know, she's this like amazing, grounded, stable, fantastic, like middle-aged woman, who just is like here to tell you about Thor, right? And so it's very important for us, particularly as heathens, to have a non-Asatru Folk Assembly presence, like in prison, to interrupt that prison to white supremacy pipeline, which is very much what it is.
So I do, yeah, I want to ask, how do you, so are you going in like coded as clergy, or are you going in like in
clergy.
Like a charitable, okay, so as clergy. So are you going in and doing like, hey, we're going to have a heathen presentation for whoever wants to come, or do you go like a lot of clergy and you go when asked? Like you go to give certain services on certain holy days and, you know, offer if somebody counseling and that kind of thing.
Well, okay. So before the pandemic, Sarah was going to the prisons monthly. Mm-hmm. She went to each of the prisons in the Minnesota region mm-hmm. every month, which was like 19, I think, mm-hmm. something like that. Mm. So she does a ton of work around mm. this. I actually haven't gone in with her. Mm-hmm. There's a whole process to being able to do that. Mm-hmm. And also like, she is very much like, I've been doing this for so long. I know, you know, kind of like what conversations to redirect. She just has such an intense experiential knowledge of how this works. So she's starting to teach me and a group of other people like how to do this. There's basically before you can go in as clergy, like you kind of need to apprentice under her for like a year or so just to like really get, you know, and yeah. like, get the lay of the land. I'm working a little bit more on the pen pal side of it because we found that because of the pandemic, you know, she wasn't able to do services as much. But if people were writing back and forth, you know, then you can still have that spiritual connection and that faith-based connection. And, you know, that could have been a very, very good thing for people. And I will also say that Sarah has, you know, is very open about, you know, like you don't need to be explicitly heathen. All of her services are very open to first timers. You know, she'll get people from all different backgrounds within the prison there. So it's really, it's a very inclusive, she does it so well. Like it's so inclusive. So yeah, I really look up to her. I think that she's done some amazing work and laid some really amazing groundwork here in Minnesota.
How do you fight against white supremacy in that kind of environment?
Well, I think honestly, a huge part of it is, you know, like redirecting certain conversations or saying, oh, well, actually, you know, this is what I understand from, you know, reading the Eddas, or this is what I understand from being really, you know, close to my faith. And she also, because literacy can be an issue within the prison system, like she will have people read, you know, source works aloud, or she will read them aloud. She has several different specific places in, you know, the Havamal and other like heathen texts that are more inclusive or that just talk about the lore in general, right? I think that, you know, like the huge issue with white supremacy and heathenry is this idea that like heathens are somehow, or, you know, like Nordic people, Germanic people are somehow better than others, but allowing, you know, maybe the indigenous dude who's curious to like sit in, or, you know, the black lady who's like interested in paganism and heathenry to like sit in on the conversation. You know, it's very much about like, who do you allow in? What exactly from the text do you talk about? Because there are verses in the Havamal about, you know, like you must give your guest a gift no matter who they are. And there is this idea of like, you need to treat everyone well. And it's kind of like a little bit of a threat. Like you need to treat everyone well because you don't know who Odin might be in disguise. Kind of a thing. But you know, like there is a textual basis for inclusivity. So looking at those. And then also, we talk a lot in our volunteer meetings about the trauma that is actually being in the system and how much being incarcerated is a traumatic experience. And so like a lot of what Sarah does is grounding exercises, soothing exercises, like, hey, this is how you can get through this really traumatic experience. Which I think also just gets people into a much better mindset and not as susceptible to hate.
Something that I hate is how bad I am at reading runes. why am I so bad at reading runes, Siri Pluff?
What have you done?
Listen, I understand the tarot because it's pretty pictures and I can remember the pretty pictures. The runes are just these little squiggles on some rocks, and I'm bad at remembering the squiggles on the rocks and what you're supposed to do with the squiggles on the rocks. But I hear you teach people about runes and how to not be so shit at runes. Tell me about that.
So, yes. So runes are more difficult to understand because, yeah, they are literally just like
squiggles.
Letters.
They're squiggles.
Squiggles. They are squiggles. So learning the, there is definitely like a level of memorization that is involved in learning the runes that is not as involved with tarot. I do also teach people tarot and I find it much easier.
I'm so glad you said that. It seems like it should be the opposite, right?
Right.
It there seems fewer like of them. Little squiggles with no other distractions. Squiggle means this. Squiggle means that. This yeah. should be easy. All the complicated pictures, and like you have to remember that the hanged man is hanging this way and his body makes out this symbol and you have to remember shit tons of stuff with the tarot, but for some reason pretty picture makes it easier to remember and little squiggle hard. Why squiggle hard?
Little squiggle so hard. So
little squiggle so hard.
Part of it is you have to actually like memorize them. And then I also think like in my own learning of the runes, like they have an attitude. They have a little bit of an attitude. So sometimes I found that the runes can actually fuck with people. Sometimes if they're just like, I'm just going to fuck with you. Like this one means horse. What do you think about that? So I think part of it too, and a huge part of my work is like contextualizing the runes for a more modern audience. Because like, okay, so, you know, not very many people have a horse in their life, right? But one of the runes literally means horses, or the horse. So like, what does that mean, you know, if you don't have access to a horse or if you don't ride or, you know, have never even like seen a horse? I know that there are people like that. So yes, there are. I mean, they might've seen pictures, but I mean like in person.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah, that's there so are people weird. Who have never, like, seen a horse in person.
What?
Yeah, so, like, how are you supposed to interpret a rune that means horse if you've never engaged with a horse? Well, horse is transportation, so, you know, we think about, you know, transporting things. And then another thing that I really like to highlight with that rune in particular is that you have to have a lot of trust between the horse and rider. Mm-hmm. So, like, a lot of it to me is about, like, how do you build the relationships to propel you forward? And like, what is the trust that you're going to build with the other people that are, you know, working like in this way? So I think that really a lot of personal gnosis has to go into reading the runes. Like you really have to think about like, okay, what does this mean to me? What does this concept mean to me? How can I modernize it in a way that makes sense to me? And it's just a long process of getting to know them. Like, I think that, was it in this conversation or in the conversation we just had on my podcast about like how like gods like to test you?
Yeah, sure. It was this morning sometime.
Yeah. It was sometime this morning.
Yep.
Yeah. So gods do like to test you. The runes like to test you.
Oh, where we were talking about like, yeah, building a relationship with, that might be this conversation. It's been a long conversation. Where like it's a dialogue where, you know, when you're meeting a new god, it's like you can't just come home with like, I'm gonna ask you questions, you're gonna ask me questions. If I don't like your answers at any point, I can say no and bounce.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah.
So yeah. So the runes are kind of similar. I feel like you just really need to work at it. You need to build a relationship. They're slow. They're a slow energy. I find tarot to be very fast moving in comparison to the runes. When I first started working with runes, like I would pull the same rune 3 days in a row. And I'd be like, I get it. Ice. What does that mean?
Did you get the baby rune right after that?
No, I didn't. You know, it just like, it took so long to get to a point where I was like, oh, it's because this energy moves slower. I get it. That's why the same rune is coming up day after day, you know, like, and I still have moments and it's not a bad thing. Like I had, you know, two days in a row this week where I had the same rune. So yeah, it takes time. And I think too, like, because there's so much distrust in the publishing industry around like who is writing about runes, you know, there's limited resources. Like I shit you not, I have like 12 books about tarot on my shelf right now. And I have like, I don't know, 4 books that are rune guides. And I've given away other books because they are literally wrong. Like they are literally
this is literally wrong. Here, you have it.
Right.
No, you take it.
No, take it. No, go ahead. It's fine. No, it's fine. No, I mean, I don't want it because it's shit, but no, you have it. No, smell this.
Right?
Smell it.
So, the example being Ralph Bloom's rune book. Just like, it doesn't match any other rune worker's gnosis about any of the runes. It doesn't match any of the source materials. It's just like his own damn thing, which
it's
is fine for
it's
him.
Bloom runes. Bloom runes.
Yeah. So yeah, like there's fewer resources. They're more esoteric. They are also culturally specific too. So like, if you're not totally sure, like, you know, the meanings that come from the runes are derived from culture, like a specific culture. So if you don't know very much about that culture as well, it can be difficult to kind of get to know them. So yeah, there are a lot of barriers, I think, for people getting to know the runes. But when I teach, I like to break those down.
You know, I want to ask you about your teaching, but I do have one, just as we're wrapping up, I do have one final very important question for you. So, Siri Pluff, I just need you to understand that this particular question is going to really just like color the way that I feel like all of my listeners are going to come away from this interview, like feeling about you and just life in general. And that is, how do you feel spiritually, personally, biologically, and chemically about Chris Hemsworth?
I mean, he's hot.
And the
much
Marvel
more of
Thorniverse.
The Marvel Thorniverse. Yeah, so... Well, see, here's the thing is that, like, I've come to an understanding, and I actually recently was on a podcast, the Real Magic podcast, where I talked about the Marvel Thorniverse. I actually really love that Taika Waititi, like, directed Ragnarok. Like, I think it's super fun. I think that, you know, looking at it textually, like, these are not the gods that I know, but
No. And it's been long established. That's why I love, because, like, when Thor came out, there was all this very racist hullabaloo. It was one of the many racist things to come out of the heathen community. But, like, Heimdall was played by a black man, and that was just, oh, my various and sundry gods, that sent a lot of people into a tailspin. And it was like, okay, I hate to break it to you all, but in the Marvel universe, the beings that they call the, like, Thor and, like, the Norse gods are aliens. They are long-lived aliens. They are not deities. They are aliens. And they are from a race of, like, these alien beings, and they are not like they are not gods like you think of gods. They are aliens. Chris Hemsworth is an alien. That's why he looks like that. Like, no human could look like that. Clearly, he's an alien. Come on now, people.
Right.
This should not have been
y'all
hard.
Y'all heathens are just really lucky that they didn't, like, make them, like, little green men or something.
Like, have we not seen Stargate? Do we not remember how this goes? He's a little gray man. Like, he's a little alien.
Right.
Come on.
So, you know, it's interesting, too. I mean, I was, in preparation for the Real Magic podcast, I did a lot of reading because I'm an academic at heart. So I was reading some, like, literary analysis of comic books and mythology and, like, the Thorniverse as an extension of and development from, you know, like, the mythology, because the mythology changes all the time, right? You know, like,
yeah,
it changes.
I mean, comic books are modern mythology.
Yeah, like, that's pretty much well known within, like, literary analysis and community. And I think that there's a huge difference between, like, the gods that we worship as heathens and
Tom Hiddleston.
You know, the literature. Yeah. Well,
oh,
and
sure. Oh,
yes.
Well, yeah. Yeah.
You know,
I mean, like, the old, like, stories.
Yeah, like, I can super appreciate the Poetic Edda. You know, it is a sacred text for me, but it's also just, like, a literary text. And I actually wish that more people would approach their...
I mean, now, I'm sure this could be a whole extra hour of educating Firelight on... which we shouldn't do. But, like, if you read all of this literally, aren't most of the gods dead by now? because of Ragnarok
they've all died
that already
because of
happened?
Ragnarok, yeah.
Right. Like, okay, so I'm not wrong there. I'm like, because if you read this all literally, and if you do like if you do the heathen version of biblical literalism, all your gods are dead. So, like, what do you do there? Because, like, most of them died in a battle a long time ago. And, like, there's, like, one god left.
Yes.
Or two.
So, yeah. I actually really love this because I'm also
Baldur, right? It's Baldur. Baldur's the only one left.
Who actually died earlier in the myths and,
right.
like, comes back after
yes,
Ragnarok.
Because yes. of the mistletoe.
Yes. We know things.
We know things.
So yeah, I actually think that it's really beautiful because I also have some left-hand path tendencies that the gods are constantly hurtling towards destruction. I think that the within Norse heathenry, there's this really beautiful, like, it's all about destruction and rebirth because of the hubris of the gods. Like, Loki is chained in large part because he sees the hypocrisy of the gods and points it out. And then, you know, maybe if you hadn't imprisoned Loki, like, for centuries, he wouldn't have ridden against you at Ragnarok, right? maybe, you know, if you had looked yourself in the face and seen, like, oh, like, I'm, you know, stealing too much from, you know, these other beings, or I'm being unwise in terms of how I approach, you know, hubris is, I just keep coming back to the word hubris. But yeah, so it's a lot of that then leads to Ragnarok. And I think that that's really beautiful as we're looking at rewriting ourselves as heathens, as we're looking at taking these white supremacist ideas out of heathenry to be like, oh, like, we are constantly destroying and recreating ourselves all the time. And that's beautiful. And it's actually very comforting to me that the gods are fallible, because that, like, the Norse gods are not, we're not necessarily trusted. Mm-hmm. We're not necessarily, like, you know, seen as, like, the super comfort that a lot of people have with, you know, other gods or the Christian God. And that's so comforting to me because it tells me that these gods can help me when I fuck up, because they've fucked up before too. So I just love all of that. And this was somehow related to superheroes, and I've completely lost that thread.
No, I appreciate that. I think that is a beautiful sort of reimagining of where heathenry can go and the direction of the heathen's journey, which is sort of the perfect place to end. Siri Plouffe, thank you for being here on Inciting a Riot. For folks that want to get more of you, what do you have coming up, and where can people find you?
The best thing to do would be to follow me on social media, because I announce, you know, all of my classes on there. Hopefully I will have my Intro to Witchcraft class out this fall. I'm trying to do Teachable for that, which we'll see about that, because Teachable has some things with pagan creators, so we'll see. But that will be good, and that will be a lot about discernment and, you know, what you need to know before you really get involved in a long-term, like, witchcraft practice. And then hopefully next, sometime in the winter, I'll be teaching Radical Runes again, which is my 6-week class on runes for divination and magic from a queer perspective. So talking a lot about the queerness of the gods, gender in the runes, all of that stuff. So that'll be coming up in the winter. And I will eventually be teaching my witchcraft immersion again. I just want to make sure that people can have time to take that Intro to Witchcraft class before I open the gates for the witchcraft immersion, which is my year-long witchcraft course. I am also on Patreon. So if you want to support the podcast in between uploads, and I also do dark and full moon ritual guides, and I'm actually probably expanding some of my Patreon offerings because I broke $500 on Patreon.
Yes.
So I'm going to start doing some
Congrats.
More things there. Thank you. Yeah. So my Patreon is patreon.com/northernlightswitch. My Instagram is @northern.lights.witch. My Twitter is @northlightwitch. And I also have a shop. So if you want to buy magical goodies that actually they're very high quality and they work because
That's
I
important.
Use them.
That's
yes.
good stuff.
Yeah. So they're high quality, mostly queer creators. And yeah, so that's at my website, which is northernlightswitch.com. And then there's a big, like, please shop the apothecary button. Oh, and you can get readings from me as well.
Gosh, you are a busy witch.
I am. Yeah.
Well, Siri Plop, it has been an absolute pleasure to spend the morning with you. Thank you
yes.
so much for being here on Inciting a Riot. I wish you the very best. Thanks for being here. You have a good rest of your day.
Yeah, thank you so much, Fire.
All right, rioters, that is going to do it here for us today. Thank you so much to my guest, Siri, all the ways that you can interact with them and get their podcast, Heathen's Journey, and all of their other wonderful product lines and all of the things that they do are going to be in the show notes at incitingariot.com. If you would like to email me about this or any other episode, you can do so at Firelight, that's FIRELYTE, at incitingariot.com. If you want to reach out to me on social media, I am pretty much at Inciting a Riot on most forums of social media. But I also want to let you know that if you like the show and you want to support it, there are a number of ways to help. You can consider liking and sharing the show on social media. You can also rate the show 5 stars on Apple Podcasts or wherever you download shows and leave a review. Even if you just go on there and just say, love it, or leave some emojis. That helps. It really does. It bumps us up in the algorithm and helps to keep the show recommended to other people that are like you that might want a show like this. Please help keep the show free and producing on a regular basis by chipping in whatever you can. The show costs money. you can do things like buy me a coffee, which is a one-time donation of your choosing. If a recurring membership isn't a thing that you want to do, you can leave me a couple bucks on coffee. Or if a recurring membership is something you might be up for, you can join my Patreon on a monthly basis. Patrons receive additional audio and video content, as well as archived episodes, a private Discord server, and monthly chats with special guests. The most recent guest was Dr. Eric Scott. It was a really cool discussion. I had a great time. We talked about the Defend Occult Books movement and all sorts of other things. So really, really cool discussion. You can sign up for that at patreon.com/incitingprojects. Also, this is coming out in August. Next month, my book comes out. This feels so unreal. I've been working on this thing for over a year, and other people are finally going to get to read it, which is bizarre. So you can pre-order my book, The Dabbler's Guide to Witchcraft, wherever books are sold, or if you want a direct link, you can go to bit.ly/dabblersguide. Thank you all so much for tuning in. I really appreciate you spending this time with me, but I'm going to leave you. As always, I will leave you with love and light. Firelight.